I don't know if you knew this, but the world of podcasting is massive. Hi, I'm Leah. I'm the host of CBC's Podcast Playlist. There is such a constant avalanche of new releases, it can be hard to keep up. Luckily, Podcast Playlist can help. Every week, we deep dive into the podcast world to find the most compelling stories. And every month, we'll give you a sneak peek into the hottest new releases so you can stay ahead. Tune in to Podcast Playlist on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. Over his years in journalism, Ed Yong has acquired quite a few titles. Science writer, best-selling author, Pulitzer Prize winner for his work covering COVID-19, and most recently, somebody who suffers from birder derangement syndrome. As far as I know, that is not an official medical condition, and it is self-diagnosed, but it is very real, if harmless. He and many others might be experiencing the same thing this spring. Ed Yong recently wrote a piece in the New York Times about the joy his newfound love of birding has brought him and how stepping away from the busyness of our lives can be transformative, whether you are a birder or not. Ed Yong joins us now. Ed, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Have you seen any birds of note today?
I have not been able to go out birding yet because I'm here chatting to you, but I can see some house finches feeding off the bird feeder in my backyard, and I was woken up at 3 a.m. by our local very loud mockingbird.
You've been recording the number of birds that you are seeing, and I mean, you started doing this in September. How many are you up to now? What's the number at?
Hang on, let me get you an actual number. I do have a list somewhere. So currently, it's about 450.
That's amazing.
Roughly. Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot, right? I think that the keeping a tally of the number is, of course, one way to go about it. But I think what I really enjoy about birding is everything beyond just the numbers and the list keeping. Mm. It's been phenomenal for my mental health. It has tripled the time I spent outdoors. It has completely changed the way I interact with and appreciate the natural world. It really has been a completely transformative hobby that makes nature feel so much more accessible, so much more poignant, and just so much closer to my daily life than it has ever been before. And I'm a science writer who's written about the animal kingdom for as long as I've written about anything. And yet, you know, this has just radically changed how I interact with it.
How did you fall into this? Because to your point, in this piece for the Times, you wrote that you've cared about birds your entire life, but becoming a birder is different. How did this happen?
So I moved from DC to California, to the Bay Area, in May. And then a bunch of things happened in quick succession. You know, I walked into my house for the first time and saw an Anna's hummingbird perched on a tree in the backyard. One of my good friends, Jenny O'Dell, who's an incredible author, yeah, lent me a copy of her field guide because she was traveling for a little while. And she had so generously and thoughtfully annotated it with all her favorite birds, like which ones I would be most likely to see. I downloaded an app called Merlin, which identifies the songs of birds in real time. And I would take it for walks around my neighborhood while I was walking my dog or on hikes, and, you know, marveled at just being able to know who was around. Knowing birdsong, I think, gives you this glorious feeling of extending the scope of your senses and your awareness. And all of these factors together just created this little itch that I then had to scratch by going out to places specifically with the intent of looking at birds. And that's the moment where I think I really became a birder.
Can you describe that moment? You write about going out to a wetland near your home.
Yeah, there's a site called Arrowhead Marsh, which is one of the best birding spots in Oakland. It's mainly a wetland, but it has lots of different habitats as well. You know, currently I can go out there and with not too much effort over about an hour and a half, see maybe 50, 60 species. But, you know, on that day, I went to the site and walked out onto a pier and sat on this boardwalk, looking over this grassy marshland. I saw a great blue heron. I heard marsh wrens calling in the reeds. I saw a red-necked phalarope. It's a type of wetland bird that sits in the water and spins in circles to stir up insects, which it then eats. And, you know, I had this incredible sense of charm and, you know, tranquility. It's been a rough several years for, I think, all of us. Yeah. You know, it's been very rough for me having to cover the COVID pandemic and trying to make sense of that. You know, my head is almost always swarming with thoughts, concerns, ideas, anxieties. And just in that moment, I felt still and entirely focused on everything around me, with my ears, with my eyes. It was just such an intensely meditative experience. You know, I tried meditating before with varying degrees of success, but this felt like more meditative than meditating. You know, all the clamor in my head just dropped out and I just felt there. And that is the sensation that I still get all the time in birding. You know, the world falls away. And, you know, in the New York Times piece, I write about how it's possible to see that as an escape from reality, yeah. But I actually think of it as an immersion in the true reality. Here is the natural world. It is all around us. It is so close to my life and my home. You know, one gets so caught up in all the ridiculous minutiae of everyday life, and you sort of forget that this incredible expanse of nature exists, that it has been existing for millions and billions of years. And I think being able to really pay attention to it is wonderful and really life-changing.
You mentioned Jenny Odell, your friend. I mean, she's the author of, I said this to her, like a book that changed my life, How to Do Nothing, which is is about that immersion in the real world and understanding what the things that we think are important are doing to us, things like social media and the pull of the algorithm and what have you. Can you talk a little bit about that? You left, for the most part, Twitter, now X, long before it became X. You were very active on it and you left it. How do you see a connection between something like that and immersing yourself in, as you say, the true reality?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when you asked me how I came into birding, I gave you a few things, but really there was this confluence of many other factors. And Jenny's book is one of them. Saving Time, I think, is just a masterpiece. And I think hit my life at exactly the right time when I was on sabbatical from my work. I was trying to reevaluate the way I think about my value and my professional and personal life and the intersection between those two. Reading Saving Time was part of this process of understanding that if I think of things like birding, the things that give me joy and expand my world, as just a sidebar to my work, which is how I judge my worth, then I will always be at breaking point. It made me realize that I needed to create time for these activities that actually are not the sidebar for a fulfilled life, but their very essence.
And creating a contrast between that brings you joy and what you refer to as kind of ceaseless production.
Yeah. You know, I sort of for the longest time defined myself according to how much I was writing. At my peak, I was pumping out, you know, 3 to 5 pieces every week. During the height of the pandemic, I was writing, you know, a 3 to 5,000 word feature every couple of weeks. Now I'm proud of that work, but it, you know, it burned me to a crisp. And I think that all of that got me to a place where I wanted to reevaluate how I thought about what makes me whole and what gives my life meaning. So I'm still writing, I'm working on another book, but I'm trying to take the time to be out in nature, to be off my phone, to be away from the, frankly, tiresome discourse on social media and into this, what I've already described as the true reality. Birding gives me a lot of that. It gives me a connection to nature, gives me a sense of community. Mm. In Oakland, there was a moment last month when a local bird had found a Cassin's sparrow at a local site. Now, this is a bird that's found in the Southwest. It had, to that date, never been recorded in the East Bay before. It is, even by sparrow standards, a drab bird, right? It is a gray and brown bird. It has a beautiful voice, but it's very rare in these parts. And dozens of local birders flocked to the site to look at this bird, and many of whom, even people who've been birding for like decades, were seeing this species for the first time. Mm. And I think just to be part of that communal sense of joy, to find so much wonder in an animal that looks, you know, so innocuous and so mundane to the average eye, was an incredible experience. You know, I think it's sort of easy to roll one's eyes at people, you know, losing their minds over a tiny grey-brown sparrow. But I've spent a long chunk of my professional life scrolling endlessly through takes and thoughts on Twitter and what have you. And I can tell you which of those two activities feels more ludicrous to me. And it's definitely not the one with the sparrow.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, and one of the reasons why this piece really connected, aside from a shared love of birds, is I think a lot of us have had that idea that we're squeezing the joy and wonder into the remaining parts of our life, that everything else is consumed by, as you said, that ceaseless production, and that we wish we could find more moments for joy and wonder. When you were able to do that, when you were intentional about carving out that time, what did you find about yourself?
Yeah, I found that I was happier, right? Like I became less anxious, I sleep better. There's so much about birding we can talk about, right? I think so much of the world around us contracts our experience, whether it is algorithms that funnel us towards specific interests or a pandemic that literally forces us to be in a smaller physical space or a smaller social network than before. And I think birding is exactly the opposite. Birding is expansive. It makes me look into treetops. It allows me to hear and work out who is there over large distances. You know, it connects me to millions of years of evolutionary time. And there's something just actually quietly radical about the simple act of spending a lot of your day just looking up. You know, I spend hours of every day outside in the sun, gazing into treetops or into the distance. And I cannot tell you how transformative that feels. It feels like such an antidote to, a lot of the things that are ailing us right now. You know, I don't know about you, but I certainly feel like almost all of my close friends are struggling right now, or at least at the very least going through a period of serious introspection. Like, what is my place in the world? How do I navigate this society whose institutions fail us at every turn? Like, how do I make meaning amidst the chaos? And my answer is not just, well, go birding, right? But that's part of it. It's about feeling connected to the natural world, taking time for yourself, looking up, listening. It's about all of that.
Having done that and being intentional about doing it, how do you make decisions now about the stories that you want to tell now as a journalist?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm currently focused on bigger projects. So I'm working on a third book. And I've just realized over the last years that the bigger projects have the most impact. They really affect people's lives. Like, I've had a great response to my previous two books, obviously to the pandemic pieces, in a way that, you know, the same number of words scattered across much shorter throwaway stories just doesn't have. So, you know, rather than sort of judging my value according to how much work I churn out, I'm trying to sort of focus on these big hits, and then also carving time for myself to do things like go birding. I want to note that this is a pretty privileged reality, right? Like, I am now a freelancer, yeah. Basically. I have complete control of my hours, so I can go birding if I want to. I think most people don't have that freedom and that opportunity. But I would say that despite that, being intentional about this stuff is still very possible. Sometimes friends ask me, like, when do you go birding? And the answer is kind of all the time, right? Like, I am birding right now while we're having this talk. I can see house finches in my feeder. I can see an Anna's hummingbird doing courtship displays on the yard across the street. I can see a California towhee foraging in my garden. And one thing I really wanted to stress in the Times piece was it's very easy to think that nature is largely inaccessible to us. You know, I've just listed a bunch of backyard birds, which are very easy to spot here in Oakland. And I remember when Jenny first gave me her field guide, looking through it and thinking, well, great, like, I'll see, you know, some of these, but there's no way I'll see, like, a golden eagle or, you know, a white-winged scoter. These are birds that are in the field guide for completion's sake. There's no chance, like, a random guy who lives in the city is going to see these. But I can tell you how to find golden eagles within half an hour of Oakland. I can be in a marshland or in a forest or in rural grassland so quickly. I've seen golden eagles, loggerhead shrike, sandhill cranes. I've been sat in a forest that's like 10 minutes from my house in the dead of night listening to four species of owls hooting at each other. So much of what I thought would never be accessible to me is actually, like, easily accessible.
I was going to say, the last couple of things I was going to ask you. One is, I was going to say that app, the Merlin Bird ID app, is like magic. It's like Shazam for birds. And that's a big help. But the other part of it is just being available, right? Being interested in looking up and keeping your ears open.
Absolutely. You know, the Merlin app is great. It's great for song ID, but its actual secret sauce, I think, is that it's an encyclopedia, right? You can look at any place at any time, and it will tell you, here are the most common birds you are likely to see at that spot. Having song samples, it's truly miraculous how much information Merlin contains, let alone the ID stuff. But you're right. It's just about creating time and finding those opportunities. And I think it is easier than ever to do that because of tools like Merlin, because of sites like eBird. eBird is a place where I and most other serious birders log their sightings. Like, you go to a place, here are the species I've seen, here are some notes about them, and so on. So, for example, if I do a trip to, I don't know, Jackson, Wyoming, I can get eBird to give me a list of all the birds I have never seen before that people in Jackson have seen in the last week, and I can get the app to tell me where those birds have been seen. It's actually phenomenally easy to get started with this. It's about two things, like, firstly, creating the time and the space for it in your life, and also getting over this sort of mental block that this is silly or hard. I've absolutely looked at my field guide and thought, I will never be able to tell apart this entire page of birds that look exactly the same. And that was 4 months ago, and I now can, right? Well, I'm starting to, you know, because of the contracting force of our world and our society, I think we eternalize this idea that nature is distant from us. But no, the natural world is a half-hour drive from my house. The natural world is literally in my eye line right now. It's everywhere. And I think understanding that and being able to tap into it has just changed my life. And I hope it can do that for other people who are trying to work out, you know, what to do with the moment.
What are you looking for in the spring migration? Some early arrivals are already on the move, but it's about to happen. What's one thing you're looking for?
Yeah, you know, I had a really great day yesterday. I saw my first Bullock's Oriole, beautiful orange and black bird. There are a few things around here that will come up in the next couple of weeks. So lazuli buntings, western tanagers will be back, calliope hummingbirds with their beautiful streaked throats. I hope to see all of them. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a busy couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing new things for the first time because I really only started birding in earnest in September of last year. So I didn't. This is, you know, baby's first spring migration. many of the species I'm very familiar with now are busting out these songs that I've never heard before. I got to hear a ruby-crowned kinglet do its courtship song for the first time. I was just blown away. They have a breeding plumage that I've never seen. Like a lot of the shorebirds, the loons, the grebes are just now like decked out in fancy colors when they were mostly grays and browns for most to the winter. And I think that's part of it too, right? Like birding is a reminder that of the very granular change in the world. Like as the seasons go past, previously I would have noted the trees getting their leaves or losing their leaves. I would note the lengthening or the shortening of the days. But I now have this sense that, oh, you know, this is the week when ash-throated flycatchers are going to start showing up again. You know, this is the week when the ruddy ducks get their bright blue bills. And that's part of appreciating nature on just a much finer scale than before.
I'm delighted to talk to somebody who is also suffering from, as you said, birder derangement syndrome. It feels like a pretty good place to be. Ed Yong, what a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Ed Yong is a science writer and birder. His latest book is called An Immense World, and that sense of enthusiasm and wonder that he has about that is amazing and infectious.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.